नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय भगवते ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda. Muchukunda. Text number 7 and more.
Hasta-praptam-ivatmanam Hasta-praptam-ivatmanam
Adinasa-pade-pade
Adinasa-pade-pade
Nito-dasayata-duram
Nito-dasayata-duram
Javane-shodri-kandaram
Javane-shodri-kandaram
Hasta
Hasta
in his hands.
Praptam.
Praptam. Reached.
Reached.
As if.
As if.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Himself.
Himself.
Harina.
Harina.
By Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Pade pade.
Pade pade.
At each step. Nitaha,
Nitaha
brought,
brought.
Dasayata,
Dasayata
by him who was showing,
by him who was showing.
Duram,
Duram
far,
Yavana Ishaha,
the king of the Yavanas,
Adri,
Adri
in a mountain,
Kandaram,
Kandaram
to a cave,
to a cave.
Appearing virtually within reach of Kalayavana's hands at every moment, Lord Hari led the king of the Yavanas far away to a mountain cave. Text 8. Palayanam yadukule jatasya tavanochitam itikshipan anugato nainam prapa hatashubaha. While chasing the Lord, the Yavana cast insults at him, saying, "You took birth in the Yadu dynasty. It's not proper for you to run away." But still, Kalayavana could not reach Lord Krishna because his sinful reactions had not been cleansed away.
Evam kshipto pi bhagavan pravishad girika kandaram Sopi pravishtas tatranyam sayanam tadrisenaram.
Although insulted in this way, the Supreme Lord entered the mountain cave. Kalayavana also entered, and there he saw another man lying asleep. Purport, the Lord exhibits here his opulence of renunciation. Determined to execute his plan and give his blessings to Muchukunda, the Lord ignored Kalayavana's insults and calmly proceeded with his program.
Nanvaso du ramaniya shete mam ihasa duvat iti matva chutam udhastam pada samatadayat.
So after leading me such a long distance, now he is lying here like some saint. Thus, thinking the sleeping man to be Lord Krishna, the deluded fool kicked him with all his strength.
Sa utraya chiram suptaha sanair unmilya lochane disho vilokayan parsve tamadrakshidavastitam.
The man awoke after a long sleep and slowly opened his eyes. Looking all about, he saw Kalayavana standing beside him.
Sa tavattasya rushtasya Trishtipatena Bharata Deha Jena Gnina Dagto Basmashad Abhavat Kshanat.
The awakened man was angry and cast his glance at Kalayavana, whose body burst into flames. In a single moment, O King Parikshit, Kalayavana was burnt to ashes. Purport. The man who incinerated Kalayavana with his glance was named Muchukunda. As he will explain to Lord Krishna, he had fought for a long time on behalf of the demigods, finally taking as his benediction the right to sleep undisturbed. The Harivamsa explains that he secured the further benediction of being able to destroy anyone who disturbed his sleep. Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from the Sri Harivamsa as follows: Prashuptam bodayedyomam tam daheyam aham suraha chakshusha krodadipte na evam aha punaha punaha. Again and again Muchukunda said, O demigods, with eyes blazing with anger, may I incinerate anyone who awakens me from sleep. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that Muchukunda made this rather morbid request to scare Lord Indra, who, Muchukunda thought, might otherwise wake him repeatedly to request his help in fighting Indra's cosmic enemies. Indra's consent to Muchukunda's request is described in Sri Vishnu Purana as follows: Proktascha devaisam suptam yastvam utapayishyati teha jenagnina sajjaha satu basmi karishyati. The demigods declared, whoever awakens you from sleep will suddenly be burnt to ashes by a fire generated from his own body. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Prachurun Militam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatavinam. Kalayavana was not able to catch Krishna. He wasn't able to appreciate Krishna's Supreme Personality. So Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book that Kalayavana was a sinful person. And as a result of his not being purified sufficiently, he couldn't appreciate the transcendental nature of the Lord. He had come simply to disturb Krishna and his devotees. That's why Krishna arranged for Vishwakarma to build the Dwarka fort, so that, because he knew that Jarasandha was coming back again for the 18th time after having been defeated so often, but that Kalayavana was an opportunist who was going to take advantage of the fact that the Yadu dynasty would be distracted by Jarasandha's attack, and he would also attack at a time when the Yadus would be weakened, if you like, by that distraction. Kalayavana was born as a result of a benediction that Garga Muni received when he was made the butt of a joke by his brother-in-law. I think it's described as brother-in-law. The Yadus all got a bit of a laugh out of it, which upset Gargamuni. So therefore, he wanted a benediction that he could have a son who would cause them some anxiety or some grief, who would cause them great fear. So, Gargamuni worshipped Lord Shiva, Mahakala, Lord Shiva, and got this benediction that he could have a son. And of course that son was Kaliyavana. Because Kaliyavana is described as a Mlecha. Mlecha, Yavana means those who don't follow Vedic principles, Vedic injunctions, the rules and regulations, which are prescriptions for ordered and peaceful coexistence in the Vana and Ashram system. Even the sudras are considered to be acceptable because they follow certain injunctions that are prescribed for them. Whereas for the Mlechas and the Yavanas, they have no, so they're sort of untouchable. But it also means that they're pretty much engaged in activities which are contaminating. They're just engaged in activities which really reinforce the bodily concept, the bodily conception. Whereas in the Varnashram system, for each of the different orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, one is governed by different rules and regulations which are designed to elevate a person, gradually elevate a person to the point of understanding their spiritual identity. Whereas in a Mlecha and Yavana society, there's no endeavour for that goal of spiritual perfection, if you like. You know, taking into consideration the different, the guna and the karma. Guna karma vibhaga saha. Chaturvanyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhaga saha. Krishna explains that the Varnashram system is designed in such a way to take into consideration the qualities of a person, the way they act, in other words, the way they've been influenced by the modes of material nature. And taking that into consideration, taking those qualities and engaging them in activities which are positive for them. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how anybody can be perfect in Krishna consciousness, regardless of whether there's a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmana. It doesn't matter. By engaging those propensities actively in the Lord's service, then one can become perfect. You know, you can see, we were discussing this in Perth the other day. Kubja was not, she was really a sudra. She was just making sandalwood paste. This is not a very, she was old, well, hunchback girl. But she offered, even though she's in the lower caste, when she was requested by Krishna and Balaram to give the sandalwood paste that she was making for Kamsa, she offered it gladly to the boys. And then as a result of that, she got Krishna's mercy. The washerman, on the other hand, who's also a sudra, was asked to give up some cloth. He wouldn't, and so consequently, Krishna chopped his head off with his hand. Off came his head. But in juxtaposition to this, the brahmanas who were performing sacrifice, you know, brahmana is supposed to be in a mode of goodness and so therefore elevated, but when they were requested by the cowherd boys to give some prasadam or some boga, certainly at that point in time it was appropriate to take the remnants, the foodstuffs from the sacrifice and give it in charity to the cow. When they were given that opportunity to serve Krishna, then despite all of their brahminical qualifications, they didn't want to surrender to Krishna. And so they later on regretted their great mistake when they didn't take an advantage of the opportunity to render service to Krishna. So the real point of the Vedic culture is to elevate a person as much as is necessary to the point where they can be engaged in Krishna's service. That's the perfection. So the yavanas, mlechas and yavanas are described, they don't have any focus or any goal on this. And in fact, Kali Yavana was coming just to disturb the yadus. That was his sole purpose. Of course, Krishna allowed the promise of his devotee to be fulfilled. Interestingly. But Krishna was not happy about the behaviour of Kali Yavana. In the Nectar of Devotion, it describes how Krishna has different qualities. And one of the qualities that is described is dhirodhata, which means proud or haughty. Right? Haughty, proud. Ignoring others. So, Krishna, it's described, Krishna wrote a letter to Kali Yavana and he said, "You're just a frog." "You're a frog. You better go and hide in a deep hole because there's a black snake called Krishna who's waiting to devour you." Right? He said, "I am so powerful I can destroy the universe with just a blink of my eyes. With a flash of my eyes, I can destroy the whole universe, so watch out." Now, ordinarily, this kind of behavior would be considered proud, haughty. Right? And we can see it here. Krishna is just ignoring Kali Yavana. Kali Yavana has entered into Mathura. Krishna's taken everybody, you know, within 24 hours, Krishna took everybody to Dwarka, built the fort, shifted everybody to Dwarka. When the residents of Mathura woke up in the morning, they found us, "Where are we?" They are living in palaces of gold and silver and in all opulence, and they wake up in the morning and they've gone from Mathura and they're in Dwarka. There wasn't a soul left in Mathura, practically speaking. The others had all been taken by Krishna to Dwarka. So Kali Yavana strolls into Mathura like he owns the place without even having to fight. Huh? Must have been a bit of a surprise for him. It was so easy. But then Krishna appeared, as is described, without any weapons. Not very nice description. And he proceeded ahead of Kali Yavana. Of course, Kali Yavana called out to him, "Hey!" Huh? He had dropped his weapons, thinking, "Yes, well, this is a chivalrous engagement. I'm a suitable foe for Krishna to fight. He's a member of the Yadu dynasty, so therefore, being a Kshatriya, he will honour the Kshatriya code and fight." But Krishna just ignored him. This is haughty, proud, you know. Yeah. Now, ordinarily these qualities would be considered bad in a person. You know, pride, haughtiness. But, and it's described. There's a very interesting passage in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The second side of the ocean, I'm not sure what that is. Eastern? What comes after the eastern side? Southern. East. South. Southern side. In the second wave, I think it is, verse about 250. It's described by Jiva Goswami how there are 18 bad qualities that are described in a Vishnu Yamala. You know, pride is one of them. Fear. Making mistakes. Being bewildered. Lying. Being overly absorbed in material activities. There's a list of 18 qualities that are given. Material qualities, which are generally considered to be material qualities and not desirable. But he describes, however, because Krishna is the source of all qualities, so they must come from him. But when they are manifest in Krishna's character, in relationship especially to the devotees, and they're an impetus for the love, the prema of the devotees, then these what would normally be called bad characteristics are actually considered to be good. So here, you know, Krishna's ignoring Kalayavana. But why? Because he's just come to disturb the devotees. And Krishna's not happy by someone who comes and just creates a disturbance for his devotees. Oh, another bad quality, to be controlled by others. Well, this is a bad quality, be controlled by others. Yet, in Krishna, this is a good quality. Krishna says, I am controlled by my devotees. Huh? This is actually a good quality in Krishna, when in relationship with his devotees. Krishna says, I think it's in the fifth or ninth canto of the Bhagavad Gita, I am controlled by my devotees. He said, what to speak of my devotees? I'm controlled by the devotees of my devotees. So this is a good characteristic. Illusion, say for an example, when Krishna was searching for the cowherd boys after he'd come back from looking for the cows, and he realized that this was, well, he hadn't realized at that point, that he was bewildered, couldn't work out what was going on. That's a source of love and affection for Krishna. It's a stimulant. So, ordinarily, illusion in a person is considered to be a bad quality, but in Krishna, in this case, it's a good quality. Lying is another one. Lying. It's interesting, Jiva Goswami gives the example of Krishna's lying when he said, the cowherd boys and Balaram, they're all just picking on me. And they're saying that I ate dirt, but they're just lying. I didn't eat dirt. If you want to see if I ate dirt or not, you can have a look in my mouth and you'll see. So Jiva Goswami says this is an example of Krishna's lying, which means that he did eat dirt. But in Krishna, this is actually desirable to see this lying characteristic in Krishna. This is actually an impetus for love for Mother Yashoda. She feels great love and affection for Krishna as a result. I'm not sure about Balaram and his friends. They might feel something else. Another one, fear. When Krishna and Balaram are just little babies and they're playing in the streets of I guess, is it an underground? Gokul. And you know, they're slipping around in the mud that's been created from the passing of the cows and the bulls. Hare Krishna. Please, take it easy. So the Krishna and Balaram would hear the tinkling of the ankle bells of the gopis, and then they would go running after them thinking, oh, here's my mum. But then when they get close to the gopi, they realize, uh-oh, this is not my mum. And then they run away. You know, like when a child, you go running after your mum and dad, you think you've lost them, then you come up, hey, mum, and then you realize, uh-oh, it's not my mum. This great fear. So even in Krishna and Balaram, this would happen. So these are ordinarily bad qualities, but Krishna is the source of everything. And because these qualities are actually an impetus for prema or love in the devotees, then even though ordinarily they'd be considered, even here's another one, absorbed in material affairs. Now, Krishna as Mahavishnu, well maybe not Mahavishnu, certainly, Chiradakasai Vishnu and Garbhadakasai Vishnu, they're absorbed in material affairs. Right? The creation of the material universe. But of course, that's an impetus for love in Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma serves the Lord in manifesting the material creation. So even though Lord Vishnu is absorbed in material affairs, actually it's a good quality. Certainly for us, because if he wasn't, then we wouldn't be here. So, even here we see Krishna is being a little haughty or proud in relationship to Kalayavana, but for a purpose or for a reason. He has a very good reason. And that's why he's ignoring him. Ordinarily, when a Kshatriya is challenged to fight, then he should stand and fight. That's the Kshatriya code. But Krishna's just ignoring his challenges and his demonstrations. Because he had a higher purpose, actually. Because Kaliyavana is actually a sinful personality, then Krishna actually doesn't want to be engaged in fighting with him. He's been quite aloof. And he has a plan. His plan is to give his blessings to Muchukunda. And so therefore he's just keeping ahead of Kalayavana. Kalayavana is running after Krishna. And it's almost as if he's got him. But Krishna just keeps that little bit ahead of him so that he just can't grab him. It's completely frustrating for Kalayavana. But Krishna ignores his protestations. He's not qualified, actually, to be engaged in this way. He's basically a sinful person. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Yesham Twantakatam Papam. Only those who are freed from the contamination of sinful life can actually engage in devotional service. This is why he can't appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Person. He just thinks he's somebody suitable for him to fight from the material point of view. But actually he's not actually able to engage in devotional service. He's not actually able to be engaged by Krishna because he has no devotional sentiment. Krishna mentions in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that in that verse, that only those who are freed from sinful activities and who perform pious activities in the past can actually engage in devotional service with focus and determination. And this is the main reason why there are disturbances in an aspiring devotee's practice of Krishna consciousness, is because we have reactions to our past sinful activities, not fully cleansed or purified. And that's why we engage in the regulative practice of devotional service. By engaging in the regulative practice of devotional service, then one is gradually purified of these reactions. And then one can develop a steady determination to engage in Krishna service. It's interesting, Prabhupada says that the only way to do this is to is basically to get the mercy of the devotees. So it's interesting, Krishna's not going to give Kaliyavana directly his mercy in one sense. Because Kaliyavana, I was thinking, why isn't it that Krishna kills Kaliyavana? Doesn't touch him, doesn't kill him. So in one sense, he doesn't get Krishna's mercy. Right? And the reason for that is because he's Malecha Yavana and he's only come to disturb the devotees. That's his business. That was to fulfill the boon of Garga Muni. That's what he wanted. He wanted the boon that he could have a son who would disturb the others. So Krishna allowed that. He kept that boon intact. But he, with his plan was actually to bless Muchukunda, who was sleeping in the cave. And so therefore, he led Kaliyavana for a long way into the mountains and then into the cave. And then when Kaliyavana saw Muchukunda lying down on the ground, he thought it was Krishna. Oh, look, Krishna's got tired now. Now he's lying down like a saintly person. So what did he do? He just whacked into him with his boot. Kicked him. Boom. That was a big mistake. It wasn't Krishna, but Muchukunda, who'd been given the benediction that if he was woken untimely, then he wouldn't. That was, and as we explained here, he was given that benediction because he'd been fighting for such a long time for the demigods. And when the demigods got Kartikeya as their protector, then he was given, you know, leave. Like he'd been fighting in the army for so long, and now he was given a chance to have a break. But he wasn't so convinced that Indra wouldn't come back to bother him again to fight. So therefore he begged the demigods, give me this benediction that if I get woken up before I want to, before I've had a good snooze, then let me be able to burn up whoever wakes me up. In fact, he had the benediction that he would see Krishna, that he would see the Supreme Person. And so he thought, well, you know, I don't want to wait so long. Let me sleep in that time also. He wanted it to, you know, happen. He wanted to see Krishna quickly. So he thought, I might as well sleep until that time when I get to see Krishna. Of course, Muchukunda was Krishna's devotee. So Krishna wanted to fulfill that desire. He also wanted to fulfill the desire of the, you know, the boon of the demigods. So therefore he led Kaliyavana in, and Kaliyavana whacked Muchukunda. Muchukunda woke up and then he was immolated. So it's interesting. Kaliyavana got Krishna's mercy, but he got it through his devotee. He didn't get it directly from Krishna. And Muchukunda got the benediction that he wanted, the darshan of the Lord, which will be now, which we will read about Muchukunda's offering of prayers and So we can see here actually how merciful the devotees are. Actually, by Krishna's arrangement, Kaliyavana got the mercy of Muchakunda, but he didn't get Krishna. He got Krishna's mercy indirectly, if you like. And he wasn't going to get Krishna's mercy because he was a disturbance to the devotees. We can see here, Krishna will go out of his way to serve the devotees, but anybody who's a disturbance to the devotees, then he remains aloof from them. It's a very important lesson that we can learn from this pastime. Don't be a if you want to please Krishna, then don't be a disturbance to his devotees. And Kaliyavana, he was a disturbance, and so therefore Krishna ignored him. But led him to his devotees so that he did get the mercy. Now, it doesn't mention what happened to Kaliyavana. It doesn't say whether he got liberation or whatever. But he left his body in the presence of Krishna, so we could assume that he got some elevation as a result by the mercy of Muchakunda. But he didn't get Krishna's mercy, like the other demons. You know, we read about demons in the Krishna book who are killed by Krishna. He didn't get that benediction. And, you know, having been killed by Krishna, they recognized Krishna as the person. In other words, they're quite special. They recognized Krishna as the personality of Godhead. So even though they were demons, they got a realization of Krishna and his personality. It was Kaliyavana, because of his sinful nature, sinful personality, he couldn't recognize Krishna as the personality of Godhead. He didn't have the qualification of devotion. Whereas it appears in some of the demons, somehow or other, due to past pious activities, because we can see that, say, in the case of other personalities, Shishupal and others, they eventually actually recognize that Krishna, yes, he's the Supreme Person, finally, after a number of births. And of course that's then related to the pastime of Jaya and Vijaya. But here Kaliyavana, not pious, not freed from sinful activities, and so therefore not able to get an appreciation of Krishna, because he's not able to engage in devotional service. When those who engage in devotional service by the mercy of the devotees, they get an opportunity to render some service to Krishna, and as a result of that devotional service they get to know Krishna. I think we'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? There are three different types of devotees. There are those who chant Hare Krishna but don't follow any principles, or they don't follow the principles properly. Those kind of devotees we recognize as devotees. We offer our respects, but we keep our distance. They're not good association. The sadhakas may still have some material desire, but they don't act on them. They're sadhakas. They follow the regulated principles, chant Hare Krishna, they render service to Krishna, but they don't engage in sinful activities. We can make friends with those devotees. Those who are sincerely trying to serve their spiritual master, rendering devotional service to Krishna, they're suitable for making friendship. We offer our respect, we bow down to such devotees. Those who are fully purified, then we can also engage in their service. The process of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, raganuga bhakti, and prema bhakti, are all considered to be pure devotional service. So anybody engaged in sadhana bhakti and above is considered a pure devotee. So we can associate with those persons. Person who's maybe chanting Hare Krishna, performing devotional service, but still engaged in sinful activities, we should be respectful to them, but we can avoid them. So, you know, we're polite and friendly, but we don't associate with them. That's how we tell. But those devotees who are engaged in devotional service, according to the rules and regulations, may not be 100% pure devotees, but they're still considered, they still fall into the category of pure devotee. Because they don't engage, according to they follow the regulated principles, and they don't perform any sinful activities. That association is very powerful, because in that association we get an opportunity to hear and chant about Krishna. And that's, you know, the means of our, one of the main means, powerful means of our purification, purification of consciousness, by hearing. That's the beginning of devotional service, hearing and chanting. So we may even do some hearing and chanting in the association of those devotees who aren't following properly, because they have an inclination to chant Hare Krishna. We may get some benefit from their association. But generally, the bad association is not good for us, so therefore they're avoided. But the association of the sadhakas is desirable and immensely powerful, because by that hearing and chanting, one becomes purified. And one learns the process of devotional service. And then one, by their mercy, is engaged in that process. So that's how we know. We can tell by analysis. We have to be somewhat discriminating. Krishna can see, the Paramahamsas can see everybody equally. But a practicing devotee is not that elevated and has to discriminate between those to associate with and those to be avoided. And so we avoid the materialistic people, and we also avoid materialistic devotees. For our own safety, security in Krishna consciousness. Anything else?
During the feast of Uttakunda killing Kalyan,
yeah.
It's not mentioned what his destination is.
Not that I could see. Maybe it's mentioned somewhere. But I always wondered, why doesn't Krishna kill him? Kills all the other demons, fights with them. Why doesn't he fight with Kalyavana? The reason why he doesn't fight with Kalyavana is because he's, you know, really sinful character, who's just there to disturb the devotees. Because the other demons also are there to disturb the devotees and disturb Krishna, but not to the same degree, for whatever reason. For all practical, there's a difference. Yet, he did get the mercy of a devotee. Of course, Mujjakunda didn't touch him either. He just looked at him, bang, touched him with his glance, and that was enough. Up he went. Now, there must be some benefit for him in that. Mujjakunda's a pure devotee, so there must be some benefit for him. It's not mentioned, but there must be. But even that's not engaging in service, when you think about it, right? Didn't get to do any service, he just went up and smoked.
How can we discriminate without being judgmental?
Without being what?
Without being judgmental.
Judgmental.
Yeah.
That requires maturity, it requires advancement, I suppose. Pandita samadarshanaha. We have to see that everybody is a spirit soul, right? So, you know, some spirit souls are running around on four legs. Some spirit souls are running around on two legs. Some spirit souls are flying in the sky. You know, they're all spirit souls, but they've got different bodies according to their past karma. And as a result of their past karma, they're behaving in a particular way. So that's why we avoid them. You know, you don't go and embrace a tiger. You know, I used to work at the zoo. So we used to go and muck around with the animals. You weren't not supposed to do this, but you know. And the workers, you know, they would try the panther out. You could stick your finger in his mouth, but he could bite, and he would bite really hard. So the... Well, there was one guy, Norm, he's a really big bloke, and he used to have arm wrestles with Percy the chimpanzee. And Percy was really big. He's a real character. Very friendly. Very intelligent. He was brought up with humans. But then Percy didn't like getting beaten because Norm was really so. He just pulled his bit him. So you got to be careful about playing with the animals at the zoo because, you know, they don't play fair sometimes. They play dirty. So you got to be very, you know, you got to use your intelligence. Don't stick your finger in a panther's mouth. Even though, you know, he's a spirit soul and we're supposed to treat all spirit souls equally. So that's not, you know, being judgmental is you're out of it because you're out of it, sort of kind of a thing. We can still remain detached and treat everybody respectfully, you know, and therefore equally in that regard. But judgmental sort of indicates a type of attitude that we might have. Especially, you know, when you're preaching, you might see somebody coming down the street and then you can see that actually the person has been engaged in, you know, less than pious activities by their looks and by their behaviour and so forth. Now, we could avoid them. Say, oh, no, I won't approach that person because he looks like a, you know, sinful person or whatever. But, you know, oftentimes it happens that we approach, if we avoid judging, you know, who we should approach and who we shouldn't approach, but we just approach them all equally, people who look like they're really out of it actually have some devotional qualification. And people who look sort of qualified, they're big demons. So it's hard to tell from the external. So it's recommended that we keep, you know, we remain equipoised towards everybody. But we take into consideration still the karmas that they've performed. You know, we can see it. This person, or certainly we can see it, especially when it comes to the animals and the human beings, for example. And also, you know, we see it here in the temple. There are devotees who come to the temple and, you know, they're chanting Hare Krishna, but they may not be good sadhakas. But we should still be respectful and polite and, you know, gentlemanly towards them, because we've got to encourage everybody in Krishna consciousness. But by the same token also, we recognise, you know, that chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in activities that are unbeneficial will not help us make progress, so therefore we don't associate closely with those devotees. But we should be friendly to everybody and encouraging. And we should also know that engaging in those, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in activities not recommended they won't make much progress, that's the thing, right? So rather than judging them for being out, oh, you're out of it, or whatever, because they may be out of it, but that's another thing. But we encourage them still, because we know that if a person can be encouraged and remain steady in Krishna consciousness, then they will make progress. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the example, the wedding party. If we're engaging in devotional service, but we're hanging on to our material attachments, that's like the wedding party. They're rowing their boat all night, hoping to get to their destination, but they forgot to untie their boat. And so they stay in the same place. They don't go anywhere. Huh? They have the big party. Yeah, we're going home. Fantastic. But then when they wake up in the morning, they discover that their boat didn't go anywhere because they forgot to untie it. So, we want to encourage people, chant Hare Krishna, but also give up these unwanted, take a vow, make a determination, associate with those devotees who have made the determination and have been successful. Give up, useless activities, because it'll only hold you back in your spiritual life. And then what happens is you get disturbed. Instead of the chanting of Hare Krishna having its effect, the effect gets disturbed. So we know that, but still we encourage people. Chant Hare Krishna, give up this nonsense. Be happy. Otherwise, don't give up the nonsense and be disturbed. Which would you prefer? Who likes? Hands up those who like being disturbed. Nobody. Nobody likes being disturbed. That's good. Good sign. But this is an interesting point, because what is that verse? Yesham twantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam. One has to become purified of the papa of sinful activities, and engage in pious activities, especially devotional service. In our case, not material pious activities, but devotional pious activities. So, in order to be engaged in devotional service, we have to give up this papa or sinful activities. It's got to be given up. And so, in order to do that, we engage in the practice of devotional service. That means the regulated principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. We have to give those things up. If we want to make progress in devotional service, they just have to be given up. Right? Otherwise you won't make progress, Krishna says. So therefore we practice devotional service. You want to become a tennis champion, so you practice. We want to become devotees, so therefore we practice. But in order to get onto this platform of purification, there are some things we've just got to give up. Can't hang on to them and chant Hare Krishna and make progress. Can't. Just doesn't work. And then all you'd become, you and others, is disturbed. So what's the good of that? There's absolutely no benefit for anybody. So this is austerity for some of us. That's an austerity. But we should encourage those. We should encourage everybody. We do. We encourage everyone. Chant Hare Krishna. And yes, it is difficult sometimes to give up these material attachments. But that's where the association of the devotees comes in. By associating with the devotees who have made that dridabrata, pajante mam dridabrata, that's at the end of that verse. That's how we become determined and fixed in our devotional service. So we're going to have to do it one day or another, so why not make it today? Don't put it off. Give up hurting yourself now. The only problem is, and see, you can see it here, Kaliyavana was a disturbance, and was Krishna impressed? He just ignored him. So what happens? Sometimes the devotees just ignore people. Why? Because they're a disturbance. They're just an annoyance. And then the devotees get criticized. Why are you ignoring me or ignoring us? Well, look what Krishna did. He ignored Kaliyavana because he was a nonsense. That's a good quality. It's actually a good quality in a devotee that they ignore the nonsense. Nonsense people. Sometimes we just ignore people because they're a disturbance. Well, who wants a disturbance? But the devotees are very merciful and kind. They try to help everybody. We try to help everyone, even the nonsense and the disturbance, for their benefit. But we don't associate closely with such people because it's dangerous, very dangerous.
It is agreed that Kaliyavana was not a good personality.
Yes.
But we can't completely ignore him because he had darshan of Krishna.
But he had darshan of Krishna, but he couldn't recognize Krishna.
But he knew equality. That's how he recognized Krishna.
Huh?
By his beauty and all his features.
No, he didn't. It says here he didn't. He didn't. He couldn't. He wasn't able to. He did see. It's like, you know, somebody can see Krishna but not appreciate him because he's such a blockhead. And Kaliyavana was such a person from my reading of that pastime. All right?
I think what he was referring was yesterday's verse that Kaliyavana was able to recognize the Krishna according to the description of Narada Muni.
Yeah.
But that's more the external feature.
Yeah, that's the external features.
He was not able to appreciate that he's a supreme personality.
Yeah.
He was encouraged by Narada Muni to go and attack Dwarka. Mathura, because you know Jarasandha was going to be a distraction. So I said, "Yeah, go and attack them now." But of course, that was ultimately for the benediction of Muchukunda and for the creation of Dwarka. It was all, you know, it was all part of the Krishna's plan. Kaliyavana sort of turned up on the scene and everybody had disappeared. And then even Krishna wouldn't have anything to do with him. He wanted to be a disturbance to the Yadis, but they'd already gone. They'd gone to Dwarka.
What I was saying, he's not an ordinary personality, Kaliyavana, because he's able to see Krishna face to face. And he chastised Krishna all the way through, up to the cave. So
no, he was chastising Krishna. Krishna didn't even speak to him. He just ignored him. I don't think he was, from my reading, he wasn't great at all. He happens to appear in the pages of the Krishna book, but
he was led by Lord Hari all the way up to the cave.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, and his whole, and as soon as he got up there was, when he saw Muchukunda lying on the ground, was to sink his boot into him. pretty great, pretty high on the level of appreciation. Huh? When he sees who he thinks is Krishna, then what does he do? Boot. At least, you know, Shishupal and others came to some realization of Krishna as the personality of Godhead in his different features. Because they were actually elevated personalities, Jaya Vijay, say for example, and other demons. Not all of them, mind you. But it looks like Kaliyavana missed out because of his disqualification. It looks like. We should go, I think. What do you reckon? 10 to 9. Yeah, quick, Dave.
Did he miss out or was it part of the Lord's will?
His pilot, well, he got killed by Muchukunda. So he got. But even then, It's hard to see how he actually did any service.
But still in life, isn't
it? Yeah. Some service was there. I guess he got to disturb the Yadus so much that they had to go to Dwarka. I've got to turn this off. That's the end of class. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.